You know, is it live? Is it not live? Am I alive? Are you alive? Are we alive? Are they alive? Does life have any inherent meaning? You know, when we detach it from market forces, we might think that. We might think that life has a non-economic meaning, but then it's like when we really think about it, like, can we imagine having that meaning in our lives? You know, we might think that we don't care, but who knows? But we're here. Calvin, thank you for confirming that sound is good. Everyone knows that I never know if we're live. I never know if it's really happening. I've never been sure in my life. And to be honest, I've never really been sure of anything in my life. I'm Michael Burns. Welcome to What Are They Doing? This is the weekly stream over here where I ask the question, what are they doing? You know, I don't want to talk about me. I want to talk about them. I want to talk about what they are doing. This week, I did put a poll over on the old community page here on YouTube.com and gave some options and people voted. And this seems to be what y'all wanted to talk about. So we're going to do it. We're going to talk about a Johnny Harris video today because, you know, Johnny Harris is a good person to react to because it's not troll reacting. You know, we're not reacting to Johnny Harris because we think he's inherently bad and dumb, or we're just trying to own him or troll him or make fun of him. Yeah, Steven is right. Don't forget to like the stream. It's the most important thing that you can do in all of life. It's the most important thing you could do in your whole life. Let's see. Did any like crazy? I feel like the chat has this energy, like something crazy happened and I didn't hear about it. Anthony, glad that you're here. Thank you so much for hanging out. JD, nice to see you. Sean Harriman, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for taking some time and hanging out. Let's get into it. I'll wait another second for some people to show up. Anything going on with any of you? Anything anyone wants to talk about? John is not sure if they are an existentialist, absurdist, or nihilist. I think absurdism is kind of boring. Whoa, we got someone coming from Thailand. That's fun. How does it feel that everyone in America is talking about Thailand because they watched the TV show The White Lotus and they're using that to learn about Thailand? But maybe it's not wrong. John is usually with Sartre. I tend to be that way as well. Yeah, no, Johnny Harris is like kind of a narc in a sense. Hey, there we go. Chris Maverick's here. You know that song, was it Kesha that had a song that said the party is not a party till I walk in? It's like an intellectually based stream is not a stream until Chris Maverick walks in. Ann Porkins has confirmed that everything is fine. Linnell Walker started a job, and that's great. We just like to see how everyone's doing. We like to see how everyone's doing. Oh, wow. Sean's going to Dead and Go with the Spirit with their dad. That's cool. Dad trips are fun. Got a new baking job. This is great. I'm glad that things are going well for everyone. I'm going to share some stuff. I did a vacation, went out of town for 3 days. It was a delayed 40th birthday trip that my wife planned. So got to leave town for a few days and have one of those experiences where in the week leading up to this trip, I was so overwhelmingly stressed, like stressed to the point where I felt like physically ill. Sorry, I don't want to be too real. And I went on vacation for a few days, went to a mellow place in Mexico, which is a couple hours from us. And, you know, I just got to sit around for a few days and it was so nice. So nice. I barely looked at the phone. I left my phone in the room and I just had a book with me. And I've struggled to read recently. So we go on this vacation. I leave my phone in the room. I just pick up a physical book. I just pick up a book. Oh, there's something I forgot to do that I got to do. I'm going to do it while we're here talking. But I pick up a physical book and I read like 500 pages. I read most of a novel. When we were on this trip, I read a book that I'm sure some of you have read before. I'm sometimes slow on stuff like this, but I read The Corrections by Jonathan Franzen. Embarrassingly enough, it's my first Franzen the first Franzen book that I've ever read. But really liked it. And, you know, I guarantee some of you, hold on a second. I'm sure some of you have read Franzen before, you know, I'm sure some of you get why I would like it, but yeah, it was a really great experience. So, you know, this isn't a deep claim I'm about to make, but maybe sometimes we should put our phones down and read books. I don't know. Bailey said, Michael, are you on vacation? True Saxon energy. Alec, I'm glad Alec read that book. At the Existentialist Cafe is a great one to get started with if you're interested in philosophy stuff. And I'll say one more thing before we get going. And thanks for the happy 40th things. My 40th was in December, so this is like a delayed trip because we just haven't had a good chance to do it. We had to get my mother-in-law to watch my daughter, which is very nice of her to do. Shout out to my mother-in-law. Theology of Liberation. I love Theology of Liberation. Jose, there's an email address on this page, on the YouTube page. Okay, let's get started. We're going to check out some Harris and talk about it. And we can talk about Harris being a Fed if people want as well. It's up to you guys. It's really up to you guys. This is the newest video. It's called Who Gets Rich Off the Poor. I saw him changing thumbnails, which makes him relatable. I've stopped changing thumbnails on my most recent YouTube video that has performed pretty poorly, but it's fine. I don't care. I didn't put a lot of effort into it in terms of production. Just a reminder, I have a video coming out in 10 days. It's my first video ever with a sponsor, which is annoying for you, less annoying for me, because it means this becomes more tenable as what I could maybe make my real job. But and it's on longevity, and I'm kind of excited about it. So, but let's watch Harris for now.
There's people getting rich off this graph.
I want to get rich off a graph.
What we're looking at here is the number of Americans that don't make enough money for basic survival. So like a family of four, two parents, two kids, living off
a lot of us probably
of $31,000 a year or less. That's considered poverty in the United States. And there's millions of people who live with that kind of.
Why is this man recording his audio on the headphones? It's clear that that's headphone audio.
Income. The U.S. government spends about $1 trillion every year helping these people meet their basic needs. In recent decades, a lot of that money has been flowing through a middleman, private corporations who are supposed to be more efficient in administering this money.
So welfare is big business. And of course, that's the irony of this whole thing, that there's so much money to be made from poverty.
Now, this is not easy stuff to understand. We're talking about government welfare programs and bureaucracy. Sometimes they're intentionally hard to understand. And these corporations,
excuse me, the audio feels bad on this video,
don't really want to be known by anyone. But if you start to dig, which we've been doing, and you look deep enough into this, you start to see what all of this actually looks like, who's actually getting rich, what the incentives are within the system, where the loopholes are, and whether or not this is actually benefiting the people that it's designed to benefit. So in this video, I'm going to show you who gets rich off the poor, and I'm just going to do a few case studies that demonstrate how this works. I'll be making a list of examples here, going from what I see as the least egregious abuse of the system to the most. I am bracing myself to get sued or intimidated by the companies that I'm calling out in this video, because that's how a lot of these powerful shadowy companies.
They're going to get him. He's having his Aaron Brockovich moment. And, you know, we know that he's CIA Harris, but it's been interesting. And we've talked about this before on other streams where we've been together, other ones. That Harris does have this tendency to veer kind of close to vaguely leftist critiques. And I think it's important because we got to remember that for all the people maybe making more explicitly leftist economic critiques of things going on in the world right now, which is good, a lot more people watch Jonathan Harris. So I do find an inherent value in someone like Johnny Harris potentially being a gateway drug to people that realize that many elements of our society are structured such that people benefit directly off the lives of the poor in an economic way. Not good. What are they doing?
Companies work. So as always, every assertion in this video is rigorously fact-checked and in my sources. Lawyers, go check that first before you send me your Mormons. Cease and desist order. Thank you. And with that, let's look at who gets rich off the poor. Let's go back to this graph one last time and just zoom back to the 1950s, where you can see that the poverty rate was double what it is today. It's like 22%. This was really bad, and it led to the time declaring war.
And this administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America. We shall not rest until that war is won.
So, A War on Poverty by Lyndon B. Johnson in 1964. This is what that war looked like. This big line. This is social spending as a share of GDP. You can see this is where he gives this speech right here, this flat line. Social spending just skyrockets right after. The government spends tons of money for this war on poverty.
And like, you know, social spending, in case we don't know what that means, we probably do, which is when the government spends money on like people. Normally the government spends money on war. Normally the government wakes up and says, how can we do more? How can we do war more? War more, more war, war more. But sometimes you spend money on people.
That money goes towards programs like Medicare and Medicaid, food stamps, public education, which is why you see this big dip from 22% all the way down to 12-13%. And for a time, all this spending worked. Poverty declined 30% in 5 years. But eventually, progress slowed. The government kept spending and people got tired of it. The economy wasn't doing well and people were tired of subsidizing these welfare programs. And that's where this guy comes in.
My friends, some years ago, the federal government declared war on poverty.
And
poverty won.
This is where things start to get a little bit murky. So we needed help. We got it from Ann Kim, who is an expert who literally wrote the book on this history. And
sometimes he does talk to people that aren't feds. I don't think Ann Kim's a fed. If anyone knows if Ann Kim's a fed, let us know. I don't think Ann Kim's a fed.
And the modern day poverty economy, and sat down with us to talk.
Interesting editing style. Like we're seeing his little editing. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not creative enough to try stuff like this.
Through this history. And
although I did hire a real editor for my next video. So shouts, this isn't a pitch. Don't sign up for it. Don't go there. But shout out to everyone who signed up for Patreon because I'm using that money.
How it works today.
Remember during the 1980s, we had this. Well, no, you don't remember the 1980s. Well, during the 1980s, there was really this mythologization, if that's a word, of the CEO. At the same time, Geniuses. The government spending was ballooning.
Philosopher
Economic
kings.
Times were not that great. So Americans were not feeling particularly generous about funding social services programs. And so the CEOs were really kind of held up on a pedestal as the ones who are going to make government just as efficient as they made their own companies.
Poverty is a big business here in the United States, and the government is making decisions right now that will affect millions of people. And yet, what I've been finding is it's hard to keep up on all of this, how this stuff is being reported, and what is trustworthy and factual. Lately, Medicaid portals have been shutting down in all 50 states, thanks to a Trump administration funding freeze.
Oh, I totally thought we were about to get a ground news ad read.
This could result in millions of Americans, low-income Americans, going without care. This is huge, and it's not surfacing stories that I'm not likely to doesn't rely on corporate influence for existing. Okay.
I wonder how much he gets paid by ground news. I'm in May, I'm doing a video on this channel with ground news, and I'm excited about it. I'm getting a CPM rate where it's clicks. You get paid by how many people watch the thing. So that's nerve-wracking. That's nerve-wracking.
Back to our list of who gets rich off the poor. So it's the 1980s. Reagan wants to rein in all of this spending. He's also afraid that Americans are becoming too reliant on the welfare system. So he kicks off a bunch of changes that over time would lead to a fundamental shift in delivering income support to low-income populations.
They wanted to privatize Medicaid, Medicare, prisons, air traffic control.
This privatization of government spending started under Reagan, but it continued into the future administrations, especially under Bill Clinton, who helped expand it. And the fundamental shift looks like this. We're going to be using a graphic like this, not only for
James,
right now, but
cool
for the future cases
so
of
much.
How this works today. Taxpayers give money to the government. The government used to give money to citizens in need directly. But after these reforms, the money would start to be distributed to the states. The states would then hire for-profit companies to do the complicated work of distributing this money to eligible people in need. They would be responsible for making sure that no one's abusing the system.
Quick important pause. Drift King brings up a question. I forgot what we decided the raw dome number was for the stream. So if someone knows.
I mean, who's eligible and who's not. And the thinking here was that the government is much less efficient than private companies. And that is true in most cases. And that if we apply business and the free market and profit motives to welfare, that the for-profit companies would make this more efficient. Less government spending, less waste, and less over-reliance on the welfare system. And the big part of all of this is that there would be more requirement for people to be looking for a job or be working in order to qualify for benefits. And who would verify that applicants are actually working? These for-profit companies. And so this is how our welfare system works today, in a very kind of American way. It is administered by private companies that you've never heard about, who are given lots of money from the government to dole it out to people in need.
So Reagan started this.
It's just so dumb. The whole mechanism by which privatization became good. And there's a thing, too, where people have this idea that private industry is inherently better and more efficient and smarter than government. And it's like, why? You know, sometimes I believe that we need to be dumber. And here's what I mean by that. We can fall into these complicated traps of like, well, technically this is why privatization, da, da, but it's like, well, why though? Really? It's just people. It's just people in a room doing the job. And the people in the room doing the job could be in a room that's not a government room, or they could be in a government room, you know, I'm just saying.
It's privatization train.
And apropos last week, some people have asked me to do a video on the abundance thing. So I might do that because A, we need to talk about it more. And B, it came out this week that Kamala Harris, who you might remember ran for president once, it went well, has been had a meeting with Ezra Klein about abundance because she's going to run again and try to do abundance, I guess.
And it was really President Bill Clinton who hopped on board that train, but got it accelerating to his destination, which was total privatization.
If you're a youngster, Bill Clinton was probably worse than you thought. Also, if you're a youngster, this guy got his dick sucked by an intern in the Oval Office and then got to still be president. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. I'll say, you know, Donald Trump, bad guy. Don't like him at all. But some of the stuff that Trump does, some like liberals and Democrats and stuff like that, definitely can have a tendency to be like, this is uniquely bad and horrible. But it's like, this guy got raw dome, and not the cool kind. He got the kind of raw dome that you probably shouldn't get at work in the Oval Office from an intern.
I have a lot of social services in America.
Who now has TV production deals. So that's, you know, at least that worked out.
Okay, so that's the context here. It's been 45 years since this big experiment began of privatizing our welfare system. And I've always wondered, like, did this work? So that's sort of been the curiosity at the heart of this story. Is government more efficient? Are we saving money? Is this helping?
I just can't stop thinking about the fact that Johnny Harris is smart enough and his team is smart enough that having the gain up that high on his microphone is probably a retention thing.
Vulnerable populations in a more efficient way? The answer is, in some cases, yes. Like, there have been positive outcomes of outsourcing to contractors within the welfare system and public spending. A good example of that is food stamps that used to come in these paper coupons, but now are delivered electronically on a debit card. This is more secure, it's more efficient. It ensures that people use these for food. There are a lot of instances where private companies have made government spending more efficient, but the purpose of this video is to shine a light on the many instances where private companies have gotten really rich off of this system in a way that has not benefited the most vulnerable and needy people in our country, the poor, the elderly.
Because it's almost like if you have profit-based companies doing stuff, their motive is profit. Again, just be dumb sometimes, guys. You don't have to be so smart. We don't have to be that smart. Just be dumb for a second. What does dumb brain tell us? Dumb brain tells us that if a company exists and it's a private corporation, it's a profit-seeking corporation, everything they do, hey, year of teleology, guys, here we go. Everything they do is going to be aimed at the bottom line of profit. Everything else is secondary to that. So if you're going to act like your primary goal is benefiting the poor, the needy, the oppressed members of society, they're getting fucked over by the economy, that's always going to be secondary to the profit motive. You basically, if you are a private corporation working in this instance, want to do just enough to help the poor that people don't think that you're actively hurting them while profiting. Don't even get me started on the private prison industrial complex, guys. That's really bad. We could talk about it. I don't want to today, but it's so bad. People are making millions and billions of dollars off of incarceration. And you know, in many ways, they're working off an incarceration system that's largely affecting, of course, young men of color disproportionately. It's a bad thing.
Really, children in need, the disabled. So finally, the reason you clicked on this video, let's draw up this list of who gets rich off the poor. And for that, I'm going to need to look at all these papers. So
I wonder if he drinks alcohol.
We need more space.
No Mormon.
Let's go to the big table.
Here we go, big table.
Okay.
Thanks for being here. Like,
so the first one on our list is slightly adjacent to the privatization of welfare, but it follows the same incentives and dynamics. It has to do with taxes. One of the ways that the government subsidizes the lives of lower income people is through a tax credit. So when you file your taxes, you show that you've been working, you've made money, but you didn't make that much money, and therefore you qualify for an earned income tax credit. If you have kids, it goes up and it kind of maxes out at around $7,000. This is a very simple thing. In a lot of countries, you like check a box and you get this refund or this subsidy to your life. But in the United States, it looks like this. This is a 45-page instruction manual about all the specifics on the earned income credit, something that should be so simple and that is a key way of helping lower income people live their lives. The tax code here in the United States is deathly complicated, intentionally designed to be so, to make certain companies rich. And this is one way that works. I had a lot of feelings about this. I made a whole video on the New York Times about this very thing, but I didn't focus on this aspect of it. Because it's so complicated, low-income people who qualify for this credit don't want to fill it out themselves, and so they go to a tax preparer. Enter this guy. well, not this guy specifically, but a guy like this representing a company.
For non-Americans, this was a part of, especially in the suburbs. I guess cities too is a part of life.
And like this, Liberty Tax is one of many tax preparation companies that advertise to low-income people to come in so they can prepare their taxes and get them in on the earned income.
Also, if you're from another country, you're probably thinking, wait, you have to like do your taxes like this? I've lived in two other countries besides America. And in both of those countries, I did not have to prepare taxes. They just sent you a thing at the end of the year that was like, hey, this is how much you made. And then we took this much of it. Bye.
Tax credit. But we now know they do so using some pretty shady means. There's a lawsuit. Lawsuit. District of Columbia versus Liberty Tax Service. Liberty Tax was recently sued for luring low-income people by saying that they will prepare their taxes for them, only to deceive these customers by secretly skimming extra money off the top of their tax refund, which, remember, includes the earned income tax credit that is meant to subsidize their lives. Liberty Tax also gives out loans to people, saying that they can pay them back once they get their tax refund.
But what that really has done is create a market for high interest fast cash products like refund anticipation loans or refund anticipation checks, which are basically just payday loans that are secured by the refund. And so this predatory industry has grown to take.
Real quick, I want to respond to Jewel. Sorry if I said it wrong. Is there a philosophical way of talking about incentivizing the things we want, like not profit? Yeah, I mean, like there's a philosophical way to talk about anything, right? But I do feel like the profit motive and profit-based thinking has gone so deep that it is hard to think outside of that. I guess the thing I would imagine is like, think about it work-wise. Some people say if there wasn't massive profits, you know, well, who would do anything? Well, I don't know. I think if there was a society where everyone had to work 25 to 30 hours a week, we would find stuff that we had to do. People would still work because you'd be motivated to have like the basic means of sustenance or things like that. But I think that like, it's almost like this. People will say that we need a profit motive because without profit motive, people are lazy. So just yesterday or the day before, Mike Johnson, a senator, congressman, I don't give a fuck who he is, from Louisiana, bad guy, said in some new bill about something, and it's going to get men back to work and off the couch playing video games. And I tweeted from the Wisecrack account yesterday, oops, I normally don't say work's name on this, the WC account. You know, what would be the justification for why working for Amazon is inherently more valuable than playing video games all day? And I think that it's almost easier or sort of more immediate to use the profit motive as an explanatory mechanism to describe human behavior than to simply say that, like, I don't know, people will probably do stuff if they need to survive, and that's okay. And I would say that like the profit motive, in one hand, what gets talked about by people like Mr. Johnson, who I think compared boners with his son. Well, that's Brian Johnson, a guy I have a video about in 10 days, but it's let's not talk about boners. But like his point would be that, oh, profit is good because without it, the boys won't want to stop playing video games and go to work. But what they don't talk about is how the profit motive is what leads to like Wall Street-y behavior where people do psychotic shit to make money. So I almost think the profit motive is way riskier as a mechanism of derangement than it is risky as a mechanism of curbing against laziness or something like that. Let's see what Dr. Kim's up to.
Take advantage of the complexity of an incredibly important benefit that a lot of poor people count on every year.
These loans would often come with high interest rates and unexpected fees. In fact, the pricing in all of this has been kind of a black box, allowing Liberty Tax to take advantage of low-income Americans trying to get in on the benefit that they are entitled to.
That's the profit motive, right? The profit motive is not what makes hardworking men put down the controller and pick up the work stuff. The profit motive is what convinces people to start some fucking Liberty type company where everything they're doing is taking advantage of poor and vulnerable people and trying to make profit off them.
To because of this tax credit. Okay, and this is where I have to come clean.
Clean it up.
I worked for this company. Not for very long and not in any high position. I was one of these Statue of Liberty guys. One winter, I was home from university waiting for a security clearance for an internship at NATO, and I needed money. And so I found this job being the Statue of Liberty holding this sign. I didn't know what the sign said, okay? But it probably said something like, need money today?
That's an interesting one. Waiting for his security clearance to work at NATO. And then he had to do that.
Apply for a $500 to $6,250 easy advance.
Also, home from university. Johnny, Americans don't call it that. We know.
Hmm. In other words, I was probably a part of luring desperate people in to get a bad loan or to have their tax refund skimmed by this corporation. I had no idea, and I'm sorry. Liberty is just one of many corporations who has gotten in on these schemes, targeting low-income people to try to get in on their tax credits. And to me, this is actually a failure of our tax system. For this segment of the population, this should be a very easy thing like it is in every other country. A box on a free government website that you can fill out in 5 minutes. But instead, we've got a privatized corporate middleman who is making all of this money off the poor. Okay, number two, housing. So here in the U.S., instead of building big public housing complexes like they do in some countries and like we used to do, the privatized version of the American government gives vouchers to low-income people and allows them to go choose a house, and the government will basically pay for a portion of their rent. This is called Section 8 housing. And there are landlords that specialize in renting to Section 8.
Is he about to tell us that landlords are bad? Or is he about to tell us specifically that landlords specialize in Section 8 are bad? I'm going to be shocked. That's a joke. I'm not going to be shocked.
Tenants getting this government subsidy voucher that goes to pay for the rent. But what you find is that some of these landlords jack up their prices because they know the government will pay for it. Like here in DC, an apartment that should cost $1,600 a month, the landlord might charge almost $1,000 more, like $2,500 a month, well above the market price, knowing that the government, who has poor oversight over this program, won't pick up on this and will subsidize that inflated price.
Yeah, like again, these systems create a motive, a profit motive, for sketchy mother effers to do sketchy mother effing things.
Now, I'm not just making this up. Those are real numbers from an investigation here in DC by the Washington Post, who found that the DC government is overpaying thousands of apartments to the tune of $1 million every month here in little DC. But this is happening all over the country, enriching landlords while depleting the assisted housing fund, all while distorting the market. Like, this is not free market. This is a totally distorted thing. Number three on our list is corporate middlemen, which is kind of a big section. I'll try to work through it fairly concisely, but it's kind of the biggest one here. This is where a lot of people get really rich off the poor. Remember from our history section,
hopefully none of you assholes are taking notes on this to use this stuff to get rich off the poor. Don't do that. Don't do that at all. Just a reminder, if you're tuning in now, this is What Are They Doing? My name's Michael. I'm trying to do this every Friday. I'm working on getting some guest book for either a Monday or Wednesday stream. That's going to be, I'm still working with the name Community College. Maybe we'll brand it as something else. Some of you had recommendations as well that I appreciated, which is going to be conversations with people, you know, academics, but also writers and people that are interested in stuff. We're going to talk about a specific topic. Hopefully they can recommend some reading and stuff like that. We'll just kind of dive deep into something and learn some stuff because we need to, because America doesn't want colleges anymore. America doesn't want education. This is not a country where people want you to go to a place where academics have the freedom to research and study and learn things and then transmit that learning to other people. What they want is a place where people can go be ideologically controlled, and where the, you know, fear of legitimate things like anti-Semitism can be weaponized to punish and deport people who are just doing what you're supposed to do at a university. Shout out to teachers. Shout out to good students. Shout out to professors. No shout out to university administrators.
A few moments ago, that Ronald Reagan shook up the welfare system by, instead of giving money directly to people who need, instead giving it to the states, who would then give it to a corporate middleman who would then distribute it. And that corporate middleman.
I like how people were like, oh, big government's bad. But you know what's great? Like a seven-tiered system of various corporate entities working together in sloppy ways, everyone taking a cut on the way.
Also had to kind of determine the eligibility of people, making sure they're working or they're looking for a job. And all of that is a lot of work, and these corporations were the ones to be doing it.
So these are the folks who are getting government contracts to act as government in running welfare programs. They're basically agents of the government. They are mercenaries for the public sector. They're making huge decisions that benefit the everyday lives of low-income people. One of these companies, for instance, was a company called Maximus, which is one of the largest welfare services.
Who would ever trust a company called Maximus?
Versus providers today. They had revenues of about $88 million in 1995. And just a few years later, their revenues were already up to $500 million. And today, they're a $4.9 billion business.
So think about it this way. This is a company whose job it is to distribute government funds to people who need money via the welfare system. That is what they're supposed to do. Why is there any need at all for those individuals to make a profit, let alone $5 billion? And the question is, let's think teleologically here, if we're meant to believe that the ultimate aim of the system in which they are working is to provide money that vulnerable people can use to just survive, if that's the goal, well, wouldn't that money be better used on those people? Why do we need $5 billion in profit? You know, the market. Well, we need the market, right, guys? We need the market because the market is good. Why is that? I don't. Oh boy.
Now, this was exactly the point for Reagan and his reformers. These corporate middlemen were supposed to be much more efficient in administering this government money. And indeed, they are for-profit companies and they operate much more efficiently than the government.
Evan worked at Maximus.
Cutting costs and looking for ways to do things more efficiently. But let's remember, this is not like a normal corporation like McDonald's that is selling a product to a customer that can go somewhere else. Let's see what happens. A few years ago, Maximus took over Tennessee's health insurance program, state-run health insurance program, it's called Medicaid. And what you saw is that many children and elderly people very quickly were booted out of the program. They were found ineligible. There was a 23% increase in the number of uninsured children in the state. That's more than any other state at the time, 2018. It took me a while to get my head around this. Like, why would a for-profit company want to kick children and old people off of the state health insurance program? I'll explain in just a sec, but let's look at one more example. In 2016, Maximus took over the Medicaid program in Kansas. And soon thereafter, applicants started to see huge delays in their applications. Backlogs started to build up, which, remember what we're talking about here. This isn't abstract. This is vulnerable people, in this case, mostly elderly people, not being able to access their basic health needs for weeks and sometimes months because their application was pending for a very long time, meaning Maximus was working on it, but presumably very slowly.
Oh,
and that's
no.
Because
Charlie Kirk stopped at the university I teach at. That sucks. I'm sorry for that, Noah. I'm very sorry for that. But I like how the comp two people are making now is like, and I got comments about this in my education video. People are like, yeah, well, you lefty liberals, you did this and now we're doing it. And their comp here, by the way, their comp they're making is our guys are now deporting academics and students from universities for expressing passively and nonviolently political opinions that we don't agree with. That is the same as someone like gummy boy Kirk, who doesn't attend the university, showing up to speak to the students. He's not a member of that community or whatever, for the sole purpose of doing some hate speech and riling shit up. Now, at the end of the day, like, fuck it. If, you know, bad guys are going to speak at the university, but if it's students themselves that are protesting against Kirk, that's members of the community doing that. It's just not the same thing, because if Kirk doesn't get to speak, you know what probably happens, guys? I don't know this for sure. I just say stuff. Sometimes there's sources. Sometimes I just say stuff. And this is the thing I'm just saying, but I bet it's true. I bet if Charlie Kirk has a contract to speak at a university and there's a fee for that, and then students protest and he can't do it, I bet he still gets paid. So you're going to compare Charlie Kirk showing up at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, then having to leave and still getting $15,000. You're going to compare that to like Mahmoud Khalil being stuck in a fucking prison camp in Louisiana without the ability to see his family because he expressed political opinions that are different than yours? Grow up.
Children and low-income people and elderly people are not Maximus's customer. They do not have an incentive to serve those people, partly because those people can't go anywhere else. Those people think that they're interacting with the government. They don't know who Maximus is. And mostly because their main job is to get more government contracts and then to cut costs so that they can capture as much of that government contract as profit. So in this case, what that means is cutting staff, making it as cheap as possible to process these applications. This answers my question about why a company like Maximus would want to get people off the rolls, to deem them ineligible for these benefits, because it's cheaper for them. They are motivated to find people who do not qualify and to pare down their list so they have fewer.
So they're motivated to not do the thing that they're supposed to do. So they're not doing the thing they're supposed to do. And then in not doing the thing they're supposed to do, they're making profits. So they are incentivized via profits to not carry out the service they're supposed to carry out. Maybe the profit motive isn't the best. That's all I'm saying. You know, and then it's scary that people have this mindset of like, well, we need the profit motive because if not, you know, like, do you really think if it wasn't for profit motive in a state of nature, in a nonprofit state, all humans just want to mercilessly kill everyone else. I would actually argue the opposite. I would argue that the profit motive is what fundamentally dehumanizes other, because it turns every human being into a bunch of numbers on a board that we turn into, you know, profit up, profit down, allows us to make really dehumanizing, violent decisions on the basis of, no, it's just number go up, number go down. We're participating in a form of economic nihilism that in the process is destroying our own soul and our humanity. All that has happened because of the profit motive. It's not as if there wasn't that, I would be this psychopath. I've become a numbers-based anti-humanist nihilist because of the numbers on the board that go up and go down and go up and go down and go down and go up and go up and go tariff, 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 up, down, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't know, maybe if that wasn't the motivating force, people would be like, oh yeah, I go to this job, it's not too crazy, I work 25, 30 hours a week, I make decent money, and yeah, I do some shit that helps people, why not? You know how I know that's true? Because I have worked jobs before that have not been I've never worked for a company that makes profits. But you know, I've worked in the nonprofit sector. I've worked in a bunch of mechanisms of the education sector. And you know what feels good? Doing something where at the end of the day, you know that you're helping people. One of my first, not full-time, part-time jobs was at a nonprofit. I didn't make a ton of money, but just as a normal human, it felt good to go to a place. I did a job with people that I mostly liked, except one guy who was weird. And you know, I would leave and, you know, be like, oh, that's cool. I might have done something today that benefited someone's life. That feels good. You know, that feels good. I think that people have that in them. And I think that we've just normalized a sort of nihilist money-based psychopathy, leftist pro wrestler. Yeah. I mean, everything that Chris Maverick does is so cool. I got
to
stop talking
for people
about
to work
him.
On, which is less cost for them. So yes, there is cost cutting and efficiency that's happening here, but it happens to be at the expense of vulnerable, needy people who the government is trying to give money to. Now, actually, I don't blame Maximus very much for this. I don't think they're bad people. I think they provide a very useful service in most cases. We should expect a corporation to behave like this. The definition of a for-profit corporation is someone who does everything in their power to make money for their company. That is their job.
Chilling,
so without
Kyle,
proper oversight and competition and regulation and performance review, these corporations should be expected to minimize the resources they have to put into processing applications and administering benefits. And another point of fairness here, if you look at the financials of Maximus, they're not some crazy profitable company. Yes, they bring in billions of dollars. They've captured a huge amount of this government services market. Their gross profit margin is 20%, which seems like a lot. But if you actually look at their net profit margin, which is kind of their more typical profit margin, it's like 3%. Oh. That's a pretty poor performance for a company. They're not insanely profitable. The CEO did make $7.3 million last year in full compensation, and they did spend over $1 million in lobbying and funding elections. My point here is corporate middlemen who administer welfare are not robber barons, and they're not running some corrupt scheme, but they are for-profit corporations who will cut costs where they...
Like, that's... Like, I don't feel then... Yeah, this is where Harris does this thing, where I'm like, why do you have to do this? I mean, I guess it might... My best faith read is that Harris does stuff like this because he knows a lot of, like, I feel like normies, I feel like we need a better term than that. But, you know, it doesn't want to offend the normies.
Can. And if they're not held accountable for doing that, the people who suffer are the people who are already vulnerable and needy in our country, which is what all these programs are meant to help.
Because they're one of only a handful of companies that are in this business, you can get away with a lot of behaviors that may not fly in a more competitive marketplace.
I remember interacting with these companies. I didn't know I was interacting with them until I started reporting the story. But when my son was like 1.5, he was diagnosed with autism. And we started to look around for services, realized our insurance didn't cover anything, so we went to Medicaid and we qualified. And my wife spent hours and hours on the phone with what I now know was a corporate middleman trying to...
God damn it, don't make me feel so much empathy for Johnny Harris, but that sucks, man. To have a kid that's in need of medical help and living in a country where I'm sure Johnny Harris and his wife make good money. I'm sure his company has insurance, and the fact that you can't have anyone, there's no one to help you. You know, I'm sure some people have dealt with this recently with like student loan stuff, where because student loans companies are, it's private servicers. People have been, I was reading today, like someone was on the phone 8 hours with Moella. What does that even mean? To try to get some answers about their financial future. It's horrible.
Work through these applications and processes. And
Doge will fix it. Doge and bad AI movies are going to make life worth living.
It was mind-numbingly complicated and difficult. And the wait times were so long.
Kind of close to dome,
guys. The paperwork and the hoops that we had to jump through. And I remember feeling a lot of anger at the inefficiency of the government. The government has no incentive to perform because we're not their customer. What I realize now is that I was dealing with a corporation. I was not the customer. Iz was not the customer. My son, Henry, who needed services, was not the customer. And in fact, complicated forms and more wait times and process is actually more business for these corporate middlemen. They have an incentive to sell more paperwork to all of us. To me, that is a distortion of what Ronald Reagan dreamt about, of corporations swooping in and making our government more efficient.
Giving a lot of credit to Ronald Reagan for no reason. I don't know. I don't believe that Ronald Reagan had this great vision for goods. I think it was just a dumb piece of shit.
Okay, that's corporate middleman.
There's no reason, Johnny. Johnny, the system's fucking you and the system's fucking your family. You don't got to pause to be like, oh, I think Ronald Reagan was pure of heart. No, there was a pile of steaming shit where his heart should have been.
And let's move on to number four.
Saw a good movie last night, by the way, guys, this new documentary, Pavements, about the band Pavement. And there was a Q&A afterwards with Tim Heidecker. That was pretty exciting. I like Pavement. I like Tim Heidecker. I think it's a movie that's on like the festival circuit or something like that. If you like the band Pavement, I would see it. If you like music documentaries, I would see it. Those are basically the two groups who would want to see it.
Medicaid dentists. Huh. Now, I've had some positive experiences in Medicaid. When I was a freshly married, in my young 20s, university student with no insurance, and we had our first baby, I got hit with a $10,000 bill from the hospital.
Whoa, he must have a really old kid. Johnny Harris had his first baby, and this is none of my business, and it doesn't matter at all. But I assume Johnny Harris is my age or a little bit younger. He has a full-grown human.
And freaked out and went to the billing department at the hospital.
Mormons
and he told me about this magical thing called Medicaid for someone like me who was very low income at the time. And lucky for me, whoever the benefits contractor in Utah was handled it very well, and it really saved my bacon. But if you look at all sides of Medicaid, you start to see entire industries that exist to take advantage of the Medicaid system. A good example of this is dentistry.
It's created an enormous business opportunity for some dentists who see that they can make a living treating exclusively Medicaid patients.
Unlike regular private insurance, Medicaid doesn't reimburse very much for dental procedures. So because of that, a lot of dentists don't take Medicaid as an insurance. And on the other side, there are some dentists that only take Medicaid. They specialize in appealing to patients who qualify for Medicaid, getting them in, and doing as many procedures as possible.
That's terrifying. Going to a Medicaid dentist who just wants to fuck with your teeth as much as possible. That scares me. Not to be a little baby, but the dentist.
To get in on those Medicaid benefits. And once again, if we're talking rational corporate behavior and incentives, these offices will often target lower income or disabled or elderly patients who are less likely to advocate for themselves and against medically unnecessary procedures.
So inevitably what's happened over time is that this market has turned into a very exploitative one where dentists have been prosecuted.
Because the system is set up such that there is a profit motive and incentive for dentists to go into grandma's mouth and just play around for a while. I'm sorry that I used your grandmother there. Sorry.
For charging for procedures that didn't exist or procedures that were completely unnecessary. For instance, there was a dentist in North Carolina who was prosecuted for having performed 17 root canals on a 3-year-old toddler.
And it's not just one bad apple in North Carolina.
This
is a lawsuit where the U.S. government settled with a company called Cool Smiles, and they are...
It's funny that a company that's probably really evil is called Cool Smiles with a K. You know, how many companies have... How many of us have been duped by fonts? A cool font, a funny font, a sleek and modernist font, and the font convinces us that somehow virtue is to be associated with that font. But sir, there is no virtue where that font resides.
A Medicaid-specific dental franchise. We had to pay close to $24 million because an investigation found that they were performing dental operations that were not medically necessary. They were taking advantage of poor patients in order to get more.
So they were just doing unneeded... This is like Saw. It's like a PG version of Saw or something that they're doing in the mouths of poor kids. You're telling me that people, you're telling me without the profit motive, people would just be like, what do you want to do with your life? Well, in my state of nature, I want to go in the mouth of children and root around and drill around when it's unnecessary, but I want to do it. No, you wouldn't. All this sick shit people do, people wouldn't come up with on their own. They do this sick shit because the system creates incentives for them to do this sick shit. No little freak is sitting in his room disconnected from the capitalist economy just thinking like, and I'll get all the old people and I'll line them up in chairs and I'll do root canal after root canal after root canal. Oh, I need a towel. You know, like no one would do that. more you create those conditions for them.
According to the lawsuit, they performed tooth extractions, gave out stainless steel crowns, did root canals on babies.
Yeah, like
that did not need them.
Oh, if you
like, there are multiple things really wrong with this. Obviously, exploiting a government system to deplete the Medicaid fund is one aspect, but performing like dental surgeries on people, root canals on babies for money is a level of greed and corporate exploitation that I cannot really get my head around. But again, in a world where companies will maximize profits, this is to be expected if the incentive structure is set up that way.
What's that system called, Johnny? I mean, this is where Johnny Harris gets a little bit annoying, right? Because he like drives the car right up to the edge and you're like, call it the Grand Canyon, Johnny. Say it's the Grand Canyon. You just drove us to the Grand Canyon. So point at it and say there's the Grand Canyon. But he drives us up to it and he says, well, you know, it's who knows what it is. It's like there's a sign, Johnny. The sign says, welcome to the Grand Canyon.
To number 5, which is similar to the dental clinics, but it has to do with kidneys. Here in the US, lower income people are disproportionately plagued with kidney failure, a disease where your kidneys fail and your blood can't be cleaned by your kidneys, so you need a machine called a dialysis machine to clean your blood for you. Luckily, since the 70s, the United States now heavily subsidizes people who need dialysis for their kidneys. And dialysis is meant to be a temporary intervention while you wait for a kidney transplant. There's always a long waiting list for a kidney transplant, so you're on dialysis until you can get a transplant, which increases your chances of living. It is a wonderful thing that the government subsidizes this because it saves a lot of lives. But inevitably, here comes the exploitation.
Overnight, it instantly created an industry opportunity to offer dialysis because now the government was going to pay for it.
One of these companies is called DaVita. I think they're the largest dialysis center.
I had a neighbor named Davina growing up. I wonder if she has anything to do with this.
Company in the United States.
Her dad got hair plugs and then left his wife. And they were horrible hair plugs. And as a young man, I remember thinking like, is that what happened? You go bald, you get horrible hair plugs and you leave your wife. And that's why I knew if I ever went bald, I was going to do it with honor.
Because of this set of incentives, we can start to piece together how they would be.
We're close.
And the thing again about dialysis is like Medicaid dentistry, it's a volume business. The government pays dialysis centers per treatment. And last year it was about $380 per treatment. So it is unfortunately in the interest of dialysis companies that run dialysis.
Thank you, Alex. That's really nice of you to say. I really appreciate that. I had to pause because I felt so moved by that. I realize it might sound like I'm being dishonest right now, but I am. When I feel things earnestly, I use a vocal affect that sounds like I'm disconnecting myself from earnest emotion because I'm afraid to express that I feel things because I was raised by, you know, an emotionless Midwestern man.
Centers to keep those machines occupied as many hours of the day as they can, cycle through as many patients as they can, because an empty dialysis machine is $380 that they're not making.
Okay, so a company making sure that their machines are being...
Again, no one on their own without any motive attached to this is going to be like, you know what, so here's my plan. I have these chairs and I have these tubes and I hook people up and I'm pumping their kidneys out all day for nothing. I just, for the love of the game. No one would do that.
Used at full capacity is actually, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. That is a company just using its resources efficiently, administering a life-saving treatment. But that's kind of just the beginning. What you see in these for-profit dialysis centers is less staff to help with the treatment, and you see higher death rates.
That's good.
And this is where it becomes so clear where the failure is. You see 17% fewer referrals for kidney transplant.
Oh.
Meaning these people who are on a temporary dialysis intervention, who are supposed to be waiting for a kidney transplant,
make more money
are kept on the machines longer because a for-profit company makes money the longer they are in the chair.
Because we don't want to let them get better. We don't want to heal them because if we heal them, they're worth less money on our little money farm. The little piggies with their bad kidneys, don't fix them. We need their money. This is the system we live in, friends. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. But at the root of our system, like, you know, you meet someone sometimes, you think to yourself, who is this person really? I want to get to the core of who they really are. Maybe it's a spouse, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's someone you work with. And sometimes the system we live in, people want to use words like liberty or freedom or biberty or shitterbity or whatever to describe this system, founding fathers, Jesus Christ, whatever it might be, Thomas Jefferson, he R-worded slaves. Oh boy. But you know, at the end of the day, the system that we live in, like this is, he's almost doing a sort of like unintentional psychoanalytic account of the unconscious of the system we live in, a system which has a deep-seated drive for profit and will create all of these false ideological structures that give meaning to that false, to that drive for profit, but the meaning is hollow. What lies underneath is the real thing. It wasn't there a movie in the 90s called What Lies Beneath about someone that kills their husband or their wife or something?
So why would they refer them to get a kidney transplant when they make more money
really close to dome
on the dialysis treatment? If someone gets a transplant, that is a lost customer.
Unfortunately, it's an option that's being denied a lot of people because it's in the financial interest of dialysis centers to keep someone in dialysis rather than, quote, losing them to transplant.
Now, DaVita has paid like $1 billion in settlements and for some of this behavior.
I mean, that's so sweet.
$350 million they had to pay after being sued by the U.S. government for paying doctors to go out to recruit people to come to their dialysis centers so that they could corner the market in certain areas. They had to pay another $450 million because they were found billing the government for medicine that they had received and just thrown out and charged the government anyway so that they could get reimbursed. All of this, once again, further draining the money that is allocated by our government to help people in need. And finally, number six, the last on our list, the one I'm deeming the most egregious because it has to do with children. And not just any children, the most vulnerable children in our society. Specifically children who have been removed from their family because of abuse, abandonment, or death. Foster children. If a foster child loses a parent or is physically or mentally disabled, the federal government entitles them to...
Bros, I'm gonna get so pissed if we learn about the government making the lives of kids really bad. This sucks. Also, man, so many people's political identity in America right now is like, save the children. You'll pass by a truck and they'll have like a gun logo and a Kid Rock sticker and a Trump thing and then like a save the children thing. But the children these people are obsessed with are these like this weird construction of children who are getting trafficked by the Clintons or something like that while they're actively supporting and encouraging a system that makes the life of kids bad in a number of ways, you know, including forced dental procedures they don't need, and whatever this is about to be.
Around $700 a month to subsidize their lives. This is one that goes straight from the federal government, from the Social Security Fund, straight to these children, or at least it should. But here comes the corporate middleman once again. States will often hire corporate middlemen, like Maximus,
who
is in fact a part of this, to look through the databases of foster children to identify which of those children qualify for this benefit, meaning which of these children have a dead parent or are physically or mentally.
Hey, so your job, Billy, you sit in that chair, you look through the list of the kids, you find the kids with the dead parents. They're big money right there. Two dead parents, big money, one dead parent, a little bit of money. It's all about the money. Find the saddest kids, find the saddest little orphans with no parents, and we're going to bleed them dry. It's a real job. Someone has, you know, it's a real job that someone has, but oh, teachers don't work hard enough. And why should we pay them? And oh, you shouldn't get to pay rent for working in a restaurant. That's not a real job. You know, it is a real job. You know, it is a real job, chief, a real job of sitting in a chair and looking through the life stories of sad orphaned kids with dead parents and figuring out how to make money off them. That's a real job in this economy. We live in hell.
Disabled. And then to go through the process of diverting that money away from the children and into state coffers.
What up, German?
The state says they're doing this to help supplement the foster care program in their state to help boost their budget. But what feels very icky about this to me is that it creates, once again, a business opportunity for a for-profit company who's incentivized to scour these databases looking for children who qualify for this benefit to divert the money away from them and toward...
So creeps that are on their computers looking for sad little kids all day?
The state. And Maximus...
It's like economic Epsteinism.
...gets paid a fee to do this. They're incentivized to do this as a service for the state, to look through these databases and look for children
who qualify. Luigi, man.
There's one NPR report from a while back that reports that the corporate middleman Maximus, who we've talked about at length here and who I will probably get sued by, would get six...
I do feel like he's daring Maximus to sue him. You know, he keeps bringing it up. If I'm Maximus and I'm watching this video, I might not have even thought that, but you keep giving me the idea, Johnny. He's trying to brock it.
$1,500 per child that they found who qualified for this benefit. Remember, a child whose parents are dead or who has a physical or mental disability, who's entitled to around $700 a month to supplement their very difficult life. If Maximus finds that child and diverts that money into state coffers, Maximus gets paid $1,600. That was in Alaska. Oh, but it's still going on. In 2018, Washington State worked with Maximus to get $6.89 million of foster children's money. Wisconsin got $4.13 million from their foster children, thanks again to the services of Maximus. Illinois, $18.7 million from foster children. Illinois didn't work with Maximus in this case, but another similar corporate middleman called Diversified Services Network to do the same thing. None of these companies want
millions of dollars taken from foster children, guys. And this is all within the system. You know what I mean? The system is designed to work this way. This isn't stuff that's happening. This is the important thing to remember. No one's breaking the rules to do this. This is within the rules of the game. It would be like if there was a sport, like we said, oh, basketball. There's a rule in basketball that you could take out a knife and cut someone's dick off, but it's fine. Oh, someone steps to the free throw line and number 47 pulls out a knife and cuts off his dick, throws it through the hoop. 5 points. It's in the rules of the game. You know?
To be known.
That was a lot. I'm sorry that you have to know that my brain that was there, it was sitting there ready to go.
Or spoken out loud. They just sort of operate as like a proxy for the government. They just...
Oh, two people from Dome.
This money is being diverted from going directly to the foster children to going into the statewide foster care program. So it still is benefiting those children indirectly. But it feels wrong to me because this money was intended to benefit them directly. These are the most vulnerable children in our society. This money is entitled to go to them.
We were at Dome and then I said the thing about the dick and basketball and then a bunch of people left. That's my bad. I ruined the Dome, guys. I'm sorry.
Conclusion. Okay, so that was kind of awful. I learned a lot about how the welfare system works and what privatization means. I also learned that there are situations where this makes a lot of sense. I didn't go into the full evaluation of privatization versus not. I don't think that was the scope of this video. What I've been trying to do here is look at places where in our vast welfare system, profit-seeking...
Why is there this drive people have, like what Harris just did to say, and you know, there's some good versions, there's some good... Like, why do we have to defend... Why do we have to give the benefit of the doubt to this fucking system? You don't. You just don't.
Corporations have found ways to exploit that system to make money at the expense of vulnerable populations that are entitled to that money, who we, the taxpayer, pay to help supplement their life so that they can have a better life. Now, what can we do about this? Is this just totally hopeless? The answer is no.
How do we fix the situation? Well, you know, there's an old saying that the first rule of holes is to stop digging.
I've not read the book Holes or seen the movie Holes. I do not know if that's the first rule of holes.
In this case, the first rule would be to stop privatization. The industry has kind of grown under the radar, unchecked, unmonitored decades now. And we don't know how big the problem is. And we can't tackle it unless we get some sense of how much money is going to this, the amount of drag that the government is experiencing from the poverty sector. And I think that's the first step, one of the first steps to take.
I believe that there's a version of privatized contractors administering public services and welfare that is responsible and actually works for serving the vulnerable populations it's intended to. To do that, it will require much more oversight and regulation that takes into account all of these incentives, that treats corporations like adults who are going to find whatever loophole they can in whatever system to make money, and closes those loopholes. Also, if we're going to call this privatization, we need competition, real competition, not these near-monopoly massive companies that kind of own entire sectors of public spending. And in all of this, I think we should reevaluate how much profit should play a role in these companies' incentives. California is also working on a profit cap, specifically for the dialysis centers, making it so that they don't even have the ability to profit as much as they do. Now, unsurprisingly, this was fought tooth and nail with over $100 million from dialysis centers.
Oh, so it's almost you let them make the money and then you try to start a law so they can so they're not as bad, but they use the money that you let them make to fight it because we have a political system again where privatized money can come in and influence legislation in a way that individual voters can't. But it's democracy. But how's a democracy? Wouldn't democracy be if the individual members of society that are people had an equal say in the government? No, but it's democracy because some of those people have money and they use the money. But is the money people? Is the money, should the money get to vote? Well, actually, Citizens United, money is people. Wait, so you say this is a democracy, but money is people? Money is people. Money are people. Money be people. Money is people. I don't know.
Centers, and the Proposition 8 was shot down. But it's a great policy recommendation, and it begs the question, how much profit should a corporation that is administering public welfare be entitled to? But
one away from Dome.
None of this will change unless the customer demands more. And the customer in this case is the government. If the government does not measure and demand better performance, these companies will not do better. The government seems to not be demanding a lot of change on the whole. There's a trend towards more and more privatization in things like Medicaid and other benefits. Our belief in the market has allowed us to be blind to some of these failures. And my worry is, as we continue to privatize without plugging some of these gaps, without fixing some of these loopholes, we are enabling these companies.
It's just the loopholes. That's the problem, guys. It's just the loopholes. If the loophole was de-looped, unlooped, anti-looped, would be fine.
To exploit those loopholes. And as we've seen, they will do it. They will find ways.
Guys, I still have to go to work. I have to drive to the place and film a video today, but I'm so goddamn tired.
To continue to get rich off the poor.
It's almost like, guys, it's almost like there have been people who have diagnosed the very system that Johnny is talking about here. It's almost like there's a system at play, and it's almost like there's been like hundreds of years at this point of writers, academics, and theorists and activists talking about this system. It's almost like there's reasons for this and that we could talk about them. I never know. Should we be hard on someone like Harris? Should we expect that someone with his platform and his station in life and his resources should be a little better at this? I don't know. Our buddy Katie in the chat said, why can't he just say capitalism is inherently evil? That's the thing. Why can't people do that? Lord Henry says, by the way, sorry, just so you know, I don't have a Lord of the chat. I have an Archduke of the chat, and it's always Henry. I don't know, guys. I don't know. You know, when will you play Freebird? If we hit 1,000, I'll pull out a guitar and play Freebird on stream. We got so close to Dome, guys. Maybe we'll get him next time. I might do a stream on Monday with Austin Smith, who wants to talk about political economy. So maybe we could get into some of that. I'll catch you guys soon. I got to go get ready to work. We did go to the Grand Canyon, even if our guide didn't tell us we were there, even if our guide didn't point to it. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for liking. If you check this out later, please leave a comment and stuff like that. If you never watched a video on this channel, maybe check one out. I got another video coming out in 10 days, like I said before. It's going to be up next week for the patrons, the Patreons people. That's how you say it in the French dialect. Very excited about that. It's about Brian Johnson and the longevity cult and weird men that electroshock their dicks and compare boners to their sons because they believe that the point of life is extending life, but extending life just to extend life is actually anti-humanist and nihilist. Oh no, I'm giving away the whole video. I should stop right now because why would you watch it? You guys have a great freaking weekend because you freaking deserve it. Every one of you deserves it. You've been a great chat. I love hanging out with you guys. I honestly wish it was my job just to sit here and do this all day. Maybe one day it will be because I like this a lot. I like this a lot. This is fun. Just a reminder too, and this isn't a trick, if you just want to make sure you don't miss a stream or you don't miss a video, because YouTube can be a little bitch sometimes, sign up for the Patreon just for free. Don't pay money. Just do the free thing and you'll at least know when stuff is happening. Okay, guys, you have a great one. I really appreciate you. Have a great day. I'll catch you soon. Have a good weekend. I love you.